I have plans to deal with Odium. As I told you before, I will not explain them to you. I am well aware if you were to know of my plans, you would be compelled to interfere. It is your way, is it not? If I were to give you the fuel for which to set yourself aflame, the resulting bonfire would then become my fault and not yours, for we all know what you are. As for Valor, our dealings are none of your business, for largely the same reasons. Can you not leave her alone? Welcome back to Following No One on Stormlight Podcast. This week is episode 247, and we're in chapter 61 and 62 of Wind and Truth. Paul, how are you?
Very excited. Doing very good. Excited to talk more Cosmere with y'all. I'm an audiobook listener. I don't know how close we are to the middle of the book yet, because I don't look at the progress bar. Trevor's probably going to roast me for that, but it's okay. We're getting further
next
into this
week.
Book.
We're halfway
more
next
page
week.
Count. Next way, we're halfway. Next week, we're halfway, which is awesome. So, very excited. Excited to talk about y'all. I have a short shout out. We do not a new patron this week, but I quickly wanted to say a shout out to Sam, who I know will listen to this in probably like a year. Sam is currently reading Elantris, and Sam introduced himself to me recently because he recognized me for the podcast and lives in my town. And I thought that was really cool. I had never been recognized, but I guess our reach has gone far. And I just wanted to say a shout out to Sam, who's currently reading Elantris and really enjoying, wants to follow along in the book order that we've been reading. And so, yeah, Sam, if you're hearing this, hope you're doing well. It's probably like a year in your future. I don't know how long it'll take you to read the rest, but yeah. Thanks for your support. To all the people as well who are not our surgeons and onward, but just our listeners, I just want to say a quick thanks for all sticking around talking Cosmere. So,
while we're giving shout outs to people reading Elantris, shout out to Jonah, who is currently reading Elantris, that Paul and I know from online. He is going in podcast order and listens to us quite a bit.
Yes, thank you to Jonah from online.
I mean, we know him from, you know, Discord and stuff.
I know. I'm just joking.
All right, Elliot, how are you?
I feel like I'm slacking over here because I don't have any shout outs for anybody this year, so, or this episode. So I don't have anything to say. Sorry.
But are you doing well?
Yes.
Okay. Can you summarize chapter 61 and 62? Then we'll do two words and then we'll do epigraphs for some of, what are we in day five still? We're not day six yet. Yeah, day five.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. Excited for epigraphs. But yes, before that, some chapters, just two this time, chapter 61 and 62. 61 puts us in a Jasnah point of view. She's preparing her defenses at Thalen City, getting ready for the army that's on the way. That's about it for that, actually. And then we jump over to Sigzil on the Shattered Plains, kind of doing the same thing. He's prepping his defenses. They're looking at the army that's arrayed against them, making their plans, watching the storms come together, the Everstorm and the High Storm, and some funky stuff is going on there. Chapter 62 puts us back in our Dalinar in the visions in the spiritual realm. They are trying to figure out, they're in a new vision. They think they've made it to Oathpact Day. So they're trying to figure out who's who. Renarin and Relaine are here at the same time in the same vision. So we're kind of back all in the same place, trying to figure out who's who. And they think they're about to witness the Oathpact. They're counting off the heralds. We've got everybody together. Except for one. And it ends on a nice little cliffhanger for us. They're about to do something. And that's the end of chapter 62.
Paul, do you have two words?
Yes, I was going to interrupt already with them because one of my two words is just cliffhanger. We're left on the edge of a scene, one of those that makes you really frustrated if you're watching a show and the episode ends and you have to wait, you have to start the next episode to see what happens. It's like right there, man, perfectly lobbed up. I think we get full permission to make fun of Tim.
Yeah, that's another shout out that we'll do. Shout out to Tim for leaving us on that huge cliffhanger.
This was quite a cliffhanger. Like, everyone turns to Renarin to say something and then fade to black. Like, this one hurt. This one hurt a little bit to have this cliffhanger. But so that's one of my two words. The other one is imposter. And I had to use cliffhanger as one of my words, so I could not use a second word, which I might have used, like imposter syndrome, and not full-fledged. But we see from our Yasna point of view that she, I wouldn't say she has imposter syndrome. That's not the case. But she does worry a bit if she is qualified, if she is able to really lead all the people that she has been slated to lead. She's been charged with effectively a lot of the defense of Thalen City, and it's a huge task. And so she's wrestling with that a bit, right? So that was the word I came up with. I don't know if that's the most fitting because she is not an imposter, but that's sort of the theme of what she's wrestling with here. She's always been a very confident character, very skilled, very capable character. But even the most capable characters will have these moments that really test them, make them think, am I capable of this? Am I able to do this? So, yeah, there we go.
Elliot?
My two words are also keying into the cliffhanger nature of both these chapters, really. I went with calm before, which going together, indicating kind of the
storm.
Yes. The literal and metaphorical storms hanging over us in all these scenes.
All right. We do have a little Yasna. We have some Sigzil. With the focused ones, Elliot, I really enjoyed your live reaction for our Patreon. If you have not seen it, go. If you're a patron and haven't seen it, go check out the Discord. Elliot made me laugh quite a bit.
Let's go there for a second, because we get a new description of one of the fused categories that I don't recall hearing about this before. Sigzil is scouting out the enemy, and they are comprised of focused ones, which there's art in the book, by the way, if you guys didn't see this.
We get audio descriptions of the wanted poster, or not the wanted poster, the stay away poster.
Yeah, they find a
radiant. Don't engage. Yeah.
That's funny.
I want to hear what you have to say, Elliot. This felt like a very odd description to me. It felt very comical, in all honesty. So I understand why you posted the picture you did.
Comical is the right word for it, because I reacted to it before I saw the artwork in the book. And then the artwork in the book is like exactly what I had in my head. As soon as they started describing these fused as having these loose folds of, and Trevor's holding up the art there for the camera if you're on YouTube with us, these like folds of body that is very like obese looking and almost goofy, and then when they go into battle mode, that all like restricts and contracts around them, and they like densify themselves. It talks about them being super heavy and strong because all that mass is like refining and squishing down into a small space. But I just instantly thought of those sumo wrestler outfits, like inflatable sumo wrestler outfits that you can get. If anybody's ever seen like the Dude Perfect YouTube channel, they do like goofy stuff in these sumo wrestler outfits sometimes. Absolutely hilarious looking. So that's spoilers. That is what I posted in our reaction, because that is instantly what came to mind when I heard these focused ones described.
I think that's pretty apt. They described it, or I think Sigzil was describing it as like, it's like they're wearing like a ton of belts, like a ton of belts. that's just this huge like circle around them, and it's just all these belts, and they're like moving. And I was like, what is that? Like, I heard this twice, and I was like, what is this description I'm being given? Like, I was just picturing, I was literally just picturing a man with like a million belts where they are now like spherical rather than like rectangular, I guess. I don't know. Like, it's just ridiculous.
This
depiction was wild.
This is straight out of one of Brandon Sanderson and Dan Wells' crazy thought workshops that they have all the time of, you know, like, what if you just had this creature that was made of a bunch of, like, one big conveyor belt, and it contracted and expanded, and I guarantee that's where it came from. However, not to get sidetracked, we have epigraphs to cover before we get into chapter 61 and 62. These epigraphs are from the previous episode and this one, so without further ado, I have plans to deal with Odium. As I told you before, I will not explain them to you. I am well aware if you were to know of my plans, you would be compelled to interfere. It is your way, is it not? If I were to give you the fuel for which to set yourself aflame, the resulting bonfire would then become my fault and not yours, for we all know what you are. As for valor, our dealings are none of your business, for largely the same reasons. Can you not leave her alone? I assume this is still endowment, and I'm kind of curious if endowments, or what endowment's plans for Odium are. And I'm also willing to bet that by the end of the book, they will no longer be relevant. So that's my guess.
I was actually a little bit reassured by this, because up until now, it seemed like the rest of the Cosmere is just ignoring Hoid. Hoid's calling for help. Guys, we need you. Come help me deal with Odium. Things are going bad. We need to band together. And everyone's just like, nah, you deal with it. Nah, you deal with it. This one's a little bit different in flavor, because supposedly Endowment does have a plan and is working with Valor on something. Like, that almost is actually a little encouraging to me. At least they're thinking about it. At least they're not just blowing him off. They just don't want to work with him. But at least they're considering Odium a threat.
Any thoughts, Paul?
I don't have any thoughts on that specifically. I've just been noticing, I feel like Valor has been now mentioned a few times.
A few, yes.
In this book. And we've talked about there being a fourth shard. I've wondered if it's possible that Valor is actually our fourth shard, and that some of the discrepancies of the things we've seen with Honor, we've talked about Honor and Valor. They seemingly sound similar. They are very different in true meaning, but I feel like there's ways that the ground could get a little bit muddied with this. So I'm wondering if Valor has some greater connection to our story that we don't know about. I'm wondering even if somehow the Skybreakers are more so connected with Valor than Honor, but I don't know. I can't hang my hat on that at all. I don't have any further evidence other than the Skybreakers are a bit suspect, is all.
I would love to get into Valor's book. I don't know when or who or where she will show up, but this actually dashed my hopes more than arose them again, because Valor has been mentioned before by Odium of, I can't even see what Valor's doing. And now, presumably Endowment is talking to Hoid about Valor, or Hoid asked this person about Valor, and this is a response. Now I'm more concerned that the timeline of us getting to know about Valor is not close. Because if this is Endowment, that would mean that the likelihood of us finding Valor would be Warbreaker 2. And we know Warbreaker 2 is nowhere near on the timeline coming up. So all of that to say, This actually made me more concerned that we're not actually going to get into Valor for quite a long time, because if this is really Endowment, Endowment is on the back burner, as far as we know. So that's where my brain went. Okay. Yasna point of view. She shows up to Thalen City and admires some of her handiwork from Oathbringer, the end of Oathbringer. And Kate Redding, I can't get over this. I need to know. Kate Redding keeps using the word trebuchet. She pronounces it trebuchet. Am I crazy or is that completely incorrect?
That is most definitely completely incorrect.
If all of my hours playing Age of Empires 2 has taught me anything, it is a trebuchet, Kate Redding.
I'd be willing to accept being told that I'm wrong, but everything that I know tells me that is a assumingly French-based word. Yes. That is trebuchet.
A trebuchet. Kate Redding can keep saying consistently trebuchet. And I'm like, it drives me up a wall every single time I hear it. And I've listened to these chapters like 3 or 4 times now, and she says it multiple times. Paul, did it irk you as much?
I could tell it's grinding your gears. I think I glossed past it. I'm questioning. I'm like, yeah, no, I think you're definitely right. She does say trebuchet, but I kind of moved past it. There we go. That's all. That's all she wrote.
I hope she never says it again in the book. It bothers me that much. Okay, but other than that, we have some trebuchets in Thalen Fields, Thalen City, to defend, and there's a fleet on the way to lay siege to Thalen Fields, so this is about to kick off. I didn't get too much else out of this Yasna point of view. Oh, besides the Wit, Yasna relationship has been called off. Other than that, what, you guys get anything?
Get your Cosmere gossip here. Yasna and Wit no longer together.
Yep. Straight from Yasna herself. Via a letter. She broke up with him with a letter.
Rough.
That's true. I thought that was low-key, a little bit lame.
That's
just a text.
It's like breaking up by text. Actually. I was going to say, I mean, I think it's been a long time since we talked about this back in Rhythm of War, right? But it was always kind of odd, I feel like, that they had Wit in a relationship with Yasna. I always felt that way. I bet some people disagree. Some people might agree. It felt a bit odd. But what was neat about it, what I appreciated in Rhythm of War, is that I feel like we got a bit more knowledge about Hoid. There's even a description, and it really stuck with me, about Yasna describing Hoid's eyes, and like that there's just like a deep history, almost like a deep agedness that you could tell by looking into Hoid's eyes. And I thought that was really cool. And there's several other details as well. We learn a bit about his history, but other than that, I don't know if that was the purpose, the narrative purpose of that relationship, but it always felt a bit funny to me. So I guess Brandon snipped that. No more relationship. Got the breakup text and moving forward.
I would have argued that the reason why Brandon introduced it was to like bring Hoid down a peg and make him more human. Because I've always kind of thought as Hoid as like goofy Gandalf, but I think he's trying to make him more relatable and more human than Gandalf is. However, through that relationship, Yasna learns that she can't really commune or have a good tie with Hoid because he's so ancient and because he's so out there. So maybe that's, it went the other way for me, that now Hoid is way less relatable and less human through the eyes of Jasnah. That's the only reason I could have seen for this relationship start and stop, you know, plot wise. All right. Sigzil on the Shattered Plains. There's a quick break in the fighting for the Everstorm and the Highstorm to combine, and nothing happens.
Well, more than that, the Highstorm like dissipates a bit. It felt to me like the Everstorm won.
Ate it.
Yeah, like in the past, we'd seen the two clash, and there was this epic cataclysmic event with plateaus getting thrown up in the sky, and you know, Kaladin and Zeth are like having their duel in amongst all this, right? And then this time, the High Storm hits the Everstorm over the Shattered Plains, and then just kind of myth. Is this a sign? Is this bad? This feels bad.
I took this almost, saying this lightly, almost as good. Sigzil mentions that this, he feels it is something intentional from the Stormfather to try and, like, time this little storm situation debacle. It wasn't clear to me as to why or what purpose it really serves, but that there was maybe something greater or some other plan involved. It also was a quick reminder to me that, like, the Stormfather is, like, in this storm, right? Like, the High Storm, right? Like,
yes.
There's a lot with that that's kind of like his thing, you know? And that was just my reminder. I kind of forgot about that detail. But there he is.
The Stormlight still works. It did reinfuse all of our gemstones, so at least our radiants are fine for the time being. But I think it's Vienta is like, they reinfused 37 minutes early and then the High Storm exploded. So something definitely wrong, which I thought was odd. I don't know what that means for, like, is Honor's power, is something wrong with it, or is the Stormfather on strike, or, you know, I don't know what's going on.
That was like my first thought, maybe, was that normally the High Storm has the Stormfather in it, and maybe the Stormfather left or isn't there. And so High Storm without Stormfather just kind of dissipates.
Or maybe Honor's power is about to reform, so that would de-investicize the High Storm. I don't know. Just throwing stuff out there. Focused ones.
Focused ones are coming. They've got a bunch of other stuff as well, right? It feels like this is the actual fused army coming in here, where they're going to have lots of different orders. I use orders because I'm used to referring to Knights Radiant, I guess, but lots of different abilities coming together for probably some pretty powerful combos, I'm guessing. And the chapter kind of ends with them spotting a Thunderclast incoming. So cue the... they have a cave troll memes or whatever you want to throw at this. They've got backup.
It's the Mumakil horn from
I was thinking. Yep. Yeah, yeah.
There you go.
This is reform the line. Right. Yeah, this is the, like, we're kind of on our feet. We they're feeling good about their little breakpoint engineering metaphor that, like, they're trying to bait them into attacking a certain area, and then they show up and they're feeling good about it, and then a Thunderclast comes out and they're like, well, we forgot about this one, like, we didn't really think about that. So they're pretty convinced they've got a good, this Thunderclast is going to make quick work of breaking through any defense, any walls, and there you have it. It does not feel pretty good. When this happened in my head, I'm like, okay, well, kind of think Sigzil's gone. Like, I don't know how they're getting out of this. Before, there was, like, I don't know, you had, like, Nightblood or something like that, some kind of, like, wild card thing. I mean, we haven't really seen much with Thunderclasts. What do you do? Like, what's the protocol here? Is there a protocol? What do you do if you see it? Are you just like, all right, well, we tried. We're going to go ahead and leave this area. You know,
what
just
is,
go back home.
What did we do last time? Lift plus Zeth, I think, took down a Thunderclast.
Correct. Yeah, Nightblood. And then
yeah, with Lift Nightblood.
Was just feeding Zeth the investiture so he didn't get consumed, right? I think that's what it was. So we just need both of them to pop back up. That's it.
I mean, there's an offhand mention somewhere that shard blades were designed to fight these things. So as long as you have third ideals, I think you're okay.
That's true. Okay, as in like you should be able to.
Right, like
grant it.
You have a matching pair.
Yeah, I am curious. I don't fully understand the. Thunderclasts have remained pretty mythical, and I don't have a clear picture of the actual power level.
Sure.
Right, and so I am actually really curious to see, is this something that's going to be like, there's going to be one Thunderclast here, and it's going to be a massive major problem that's going to be like the main thing they're going to have to figure out? Or is it going to be like, oh, well, we had a team of Windrunners and a third ideal Radiant, and we were able to take it down, but then like, oh no, here comes like a slew of like 10 Thunderclasts, and now that's the huge problem. I don't know necessarily what our power scale is going to be, but I'm curious. I'm kind of hoping for like this one Thunderclast is like the major boss fight. Like,
yeah,
it is like, it's not a, we just need to have a couple shard blades, one or two, and then we can take it down. I'm sure that's what you need in order to take it down, but I'm curious what's going on here.
I'm under the impression, I don't know where I got this from, that there's only like two or four like left on Roshar, period. So I don't think this is like an army thing. I think this is quite a bit of resources to put in just one Thunderclast is quite a bit. I don't know where I got that from though.
Do you think we talked about this a little bit last episode. I'm not saying that this is going to happen here at all, but we talked about the Chasm Fiends. Is there a chance we ever see a Chasm Fiend and a Thunderclast duke it out?
Oh yes.
Yes.
That should be on someone's bingo board. Should have been.
that I wish I had that on my bingo board for sure. Because,
well,
it's a wish list.
We just left Venli, where she has picked up a mission to go to the Shattered Plains. And they've just made buddies with the Chasm Fiends. I'd go so far as to say as Chasm Fiend versus Thunderclast edging towards likely.
I think Venli's going to melt a plateau and kill a bunch of fused all at once. Like suck them into a plateau and freeze them in there.
But that won't work for the deepest ones, right? Everybody else,
correct.
Maybe?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They talk about that, right? Like the Thunderclast or some of these other things were like immune to any like night radiant power, similar to like how you can't lash shard plate was the comparison they make, but you could like trap people.
Right.
So yeah. That was kind of cool.
Anything else for 61?
I wanted to talk, could we briefly talk through, okay, so we see the setup with Sigzel, right? We see this going on, but we talked about Jasnah in regards to Wit. Was there anything else that y'all had thoughts on Jasnah's like setup at Thalen City? I very much got flashbacks to like the preliminary setups before any fighting started with Adolin. It felt like the same thing. I don't know if y'all had anything else, but I just wanted to address that and say that I feel like that's about the same. It's just like, okay, setting up, I feel like we're going to transition as these other battles with Adolin and then maybe Sigzel wrap up to a bit or slow down, we're going to have Jasnah's ramp up.
I am curious what happens with Thalen Field. Thalen Field, to me, out of these three, maybe four storylines that we have, seems the most out of left field. I did not think we were going back to Thalen Field, like, ever. So I'm very curious where and why we're here. But other than that, I didn't have many thoughts on the ramp up for it.
I do have thoughts about how upset I am with this cliffhanger. Would you like to know what I think is the most upsetting detail about this cliffhanger?
That you still haven't got a Pyla point of view?
Well, yeah, I guess we haven't met Pyla, right?
Yeah, but... so last episode, Yasna was in Pyla's body. This episode, Renarin... I do. Navani was in Pyla's body, and this episode, Relaine is in Pyla's body. So you still haven't
met Pyla. And Renarin is in Videl's body.
Right. Yes.
So what's actually most frustrating to me, yes, that makes me mad because Trevor won't give me my point.
Correct.
I'm sure that we'll fix at some point. I'm still holding on that we are going to like meet them because what frustrates me most about this cliffhanger is we've known from Dalinar and Navani's perspective that like if they're in the body of this Radiant, they're not like given the words that the Radiant had said, like the canonical things. Like they're still looking to see what they say so that they can learn what happened, right? So if this vision if the vision changes, that's great. I expect it to change again at some point. If it doesn't, then they've all turned to Renarin to be like, so what's the key to immortality? Like they call Videl the holder of the keys or keeper of the keys, right? And it's they're referencing like the keys to like how the heralds have essentially unlocked like the fountain of youth, like this like living forever thing.
Yep.
They've all turned to him to be like, how do we do it, Videl? And then like chapter ends. And I'm like, is Renar gonna have some random transcendent moment or something? Or are we just gonna be left hanging where he doesn't know and then the vision fades or something ridiculous happens and we have to wait? I feel like this is Brandon making us wait. We're gonna have to wait till later into the book to actually get this reveal, which is that's the more frustrating part of the cliffhanger to me. Not like, oh, as soon as the scene starts back up, we'll know.
Right.
We're not gonna find out unless something changes.
I think you're right. I think the Matrix may break and we might lose the vision here.
Cause that's like, if you're in this vision, this is your worst nightmare. I feel like you're like, please, like, let me be any other herald. Like, this is the one we need to see what she says.
And don't forget, we've got some unaccounted for parties who could very well be in this scene.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't noticed it yet. We've got our ghost bloods who are lurking around somewhere, and we've got Shallan, who is notably absent in this scene. Or I would argue probably here as one of these characters.
They specifically walk in with like a bunch of guards behind them.
Uh-huh.
They specifically said it's not just 9 heralds or 7 heralds or whatever. It's there's a whole party that walks through the back of this tent. Which Chainerach is one of them. Shallan's got to be here. Come on, please, Brandon. But I do think the Ghost Bloods are here too. Yes.
Unless Shallan is Chainerach and therefore doesn't get a chance to see sees herself.
That's one of the things I was thinking. I was like, what if she's got to be Chainerach because that's how Brandon is saving this for a later moment in the story or something ridiculous.
So
we did see though, sorry, quick note, doesn't Renarin discover in this chapter that he can use Gliss to like see the soul, like basically tell who is actually who,
yeah,
with these visions going on, right?
Yeah, let's talk about that real quick. Renarin has an off-brand light weaving power. And instead of light weaving, which he's supposed to be able to have, he has like the ability to burn gold. He can see people's like potential futures or alternate versions of people. And now he's using it as a little sand to throw at people to see them for who they really are. So which I think is really cool actually, to be able to use this off-brand light weaving as a who are you reveal. And now he asked Gliss if I could do this without people really seeing. And it's like, oh yeah, maybe one day you can. And Renarin's like, oh yeah, great. That doesn't help me right now. And yeah, what did you guys key into, like, this is similar to Burning Gold, of seeing someone else's like alternate version of themselves?
That's absolutely where my head went with this, because that was confusing enough in Mistborn, trying to keep track of which metal was showing you what. And now Renarin and Relaine are both kind of doing this on people, and it's giving me little flashbacks to Mistborn. I was having a hard time in this chapter actually figuring out exactly what this power is doing. Is it glimpse of a possible future? Is it showing you the true version of someone? It was described kind of vaguely as they're doing it, so I wasn't sure exactly what's happening. Well, I guess we'll just have to read and find out, I guess, and maybe hopefully someone will sit down and explain it all to us.
I don't know if that makes me feel more so like I read this wrongly, but I felt like it was, the image I have in my head is almost like Renarin is shining like a flashlight or like an ultraviolet light to reveal like a hidden or like invisible ink type of thing. Like shining a light almost is how I pictured it in my head, that reveals who's underneath the spiritual realm illusion. My understanding is what they say is that it reveals or it shows like the soul or something along that line, like the, I don't know, spirit web. In my head, it shows the quote soul of whatever you're looking at. So therefore it removes any illusion, light weaving, whatever. So you can see who's underneath these people, who's like actually running the operation here.
A lot of these questions I think are going to be answered in the next chapter. So thanks again, Tim, because now I'm really wondering, do we get to figure out exactly who's all standing here next to Dalinar and Navani? Does the vision completely go off the rails because Renarin has no idea what to say as Videl here? I don't know. Well, we can find that out. But I want to talk about our missing parties. There are two people conspicuously missing from Oath Pact Day. Like, this is it. That what we assume is the day we're going to make the Oath Pact. The other heralds, have they ever even mentioned Taln? They've mentioned Nail, and Nail's now here. Is Nail even in the picture yet?
No, they reference him, right? They reference like someone that they've had previous like skirmishes with or something like that, but
they reference Nail that way. And Dalinar is the one wondering, where's Taln? Mm-hmm. But I don't think the heralds have even mentioned him. Like, he's not even in the plan. They don't even know who he is.
It's almost like it's setting it up for Taln to be accidentally included. Like, right, he's, you know, one of the guards in the room. But I feel like, yeah, Dalinar looks for that. Dalinar, yes, looks around, does, and he's like, no, 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 Taln's not here. So, yeah.
Which makes me think this isn't actually Oath Pact Day, because someone else who's missing is Honor. Hello? This is Honor's Oath Pact. We haven't even talked to him yet.
Well, so that actually ties into something that I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on. Did you notice the part where Dalinar felt the warmth again?
Yes,
you know, this has been a recurring thing for him. This happens at key moments throughout a lot of Dalinar's story. And there's a brief little part where Dalinar and Navani are like, or maybe it's Renarin and Relaine, I forget whose POV we're in, but they're like, oh no, the high storm is coming. It's going to crush us all. And then the wind, who conveniently pops in to answer questions sometimes, pops in and goes, oh, well, actually back in the day here, Honor actually listened when people prayed to him. And so they just pray for Honor to help them, and Honor just like bubbles them while the high storm goes over. And then as that's happening, as the high storm is hitting them and kind of passing over, and kind of, for me, it felt like the implication there was, as the presence of Honor is protecting them from the high storm, Dalinar feels the warmth. So is Honor actually here? Honor might actually be here.
Yes, but So I've always been under the assumption that this is Honor's idea, the Oath Pact, and the Heralds are just volunteers. That is not what's happening in this scene. What's happening is in this scene is Yezrian and Ishar, the two leader guys, have finally talked themselves into finally doing this. All right, we're all going to circle up and we're going to finally do this. Honor's never been mentioned in within the context of an Oath Pact. Tall's not even here. I don't think this is Oath Pact Day.
Okay. First, addressing Tall, they mentioned that both Nail and Tall are Makabaki, right?
Correct.
That we like knew that, but they bring it up here. And there's been, you're right, they haven't really talked about Tall, but there's been a lot of talks about Nail. A lot might be strong to say, but they've mentioned it several times. They almost, I don't remember all that they say, but they mentioned Nail as being kind of different. Almost sounds almost like he's a little bit antagonistic or kind of a anti-hero to at least them, to like how they're approaching things. And you know, it sounds like Nail is still kind of how he is modern day, almost like he's very rigid, very direct, letter of the law approach, right? And that's clashed with Yezrian, and that's clashed with maybe their plans. So, I don't know. I feel like they're going to be connected, Nail and Tall, somehow. I guess just because they're both Makabaki. So I'm like, we're waiting for them to kind of storm onto the scene. But I imagine, I don't know. I feel like it could be one of those things where they all of a sudden the proverbial door opens and they walk in, you know, like at any moment during this time.
Nail is here. Nail is finally here at in chapter 62. Tall is not. But something I've gathered from last episode and this, we didn't actually talk about it in last episode. They talk about Nail as an old adversary. Like back on Ashen, he was our enemy. But now we're...
That's right.
Now we're allies by necessity against the Singers. And that's the kind of the relationship between seven of the Heralds or eight of the Heralds and Nail is... Old adversaries forced to be friends now. Now, Nail is... with that context, Yezrian and Chanarach have a conversation last episode of, our god was never passion. Our god was always odium. And Nail and the Makabak people were the ones to see through that, and we fought on the wrong side of that war. So that gave me the clue of Nail and maybe Taln never were on the side of Odium. The Makabaki people never were on the side of Odium back on Ashen. The rest of the Heralds were. So I think actually that might play into this Oath Pact thing of maybe 8 of the 10 Heralds get tricked into this Oath Pact by Odium. And Nail and Tom are the two that don't. That's been stewing in my head for a little bit.
Something funky is going to happen. I think you're right. It's not going to be as straightforward as maybe would have thought it would have been a while ago.
I do agree that something funky is happening, but I'm very curious to see how the shards play into this, because I don't think we're going to have a situation where it's like split. Like it's like eight of them were somehow under Odium in this Oath Pact and the other two were not. I just feel like that doesn't line up. But me saying that, I don't have like a resolution. Like, oh yeah, no, it's just this instead. I'm very curious. I even have a feeling... We were talking about, okay, this is a cliffhanger returning to Renarin in Videl's body, and that they're returning to him for the keys to immortality, essentially, right? I'm wondering if how that happens, not that Renarin opens his mouth and can't answer, and then breaks the illusion here. I wonder if instead Renarin is going to be interrupted by Tom or someone entering the scene, whether that's Honor, whether that's Tom, something like that. Hmm. That's my little guess, is instead of he opens his mouth and reveals something's wrong, instead it's going to be one of these characters that are missing is going to somehow stumble in right here and interrupt.
What if our next chapter is a Tanavast point of view and he just walks into the tent, Paul?
I will be so excited. That's the dream. I'm afraid that's not going to be the case, but man, that is what I want. Absolutely. As you mentioned that, not related to Tanavast specifically, but we do get mentioned here that was it L or the person that we saw pretty recently.
Yeah,
we talked about that was kind of like leader, a friend of them.
Leader of the singer guy, yeah.
Yeah, we were wondering if this was L, right? Because it started with an E. I don't remember the longer name.
Elobar right? Or something like that? Let me go look.
Something along those lines. We get the mention or confirmation here that person has like left and gone to do their own things and is a bit of an adversary now, right?
Yes.
And specifically has become a fused. They yes. say here that L is now a fused. But yeah, they definitely don't. They don't tie it together 100% completely. It feels like a reference to that. Because the old guy, Elodie or whatever his name was.
Elodie, that's right.
And they say, oh, Yezrian, your old pal L is now definitely a fused. So problem. Is that the same guy?
I assume it's gotta be, yeah.
I think it was a one-liner last episode, and like between Yezrian and Chanarach, and we not in this episode, but last episode.
Glad I remembered it at least at some point. Because that's pretty cool. I've appreciated that because L was one of those characters that I never really had anything hanging on that character. Like they were like, yeah, L, this used this like somewhat formidable opponent. I was like, okay, well, I'm not really worried about him. There's bigger matters at hand. But this puts a bit more skin in the game. If it was like an old friend of the Heralds, one from this time, like from way back then, right? Becoming a fuse, like that's a bigger deal. And so that I actually really appreciate that a lot because, like I said, I had no emotional attachment or investment into L whatsoever.
It also gives you a timeline of when the fused showed up. This is still well before the Knights Radiant. So the Knights Radiant and the fused being like old traditional enemies, not necessarily the case. The fused now have been around for way longer than the Knights Radiant have, based on this timeline now. So, anything else from these two chapters? Fairly short, but
that's all I had from these chapters. Well, Paul spills his water all over his face.
That's all I had. I didn't have anything else. That was a good episode, that's for sure.
All right, let me look at what we have for next week. Where's Tim's DMs? Okay. Next week we have chapter 63, 64, and 65 for chapter 248. So we can reconvene with that. Thanks for joining me, Paul and Elliot.
Later.
And see ya later, Toodles.